Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It is Friday, July 16th, 2021. Today, as we do every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So listeners can be forgiven for thinking the book business is trapped in a kind of Groundhog Day scenario, Andrew. As PW reported this week, print book sales remain strong, which is what you've been saying for over a year now.
Yeah, that's a good kind of Groundhog Day, right? So the NPD book scan numbers came out this week for the first half of 2021. And as you say, the book business's strong performance from 2020 has continued into 2021, with units jumping a staggering 18.5% in the first 6 months over the comparable period in 2020. The news was good across the board, with all the major publishing categories posting double-digit sales increases in the first half of the year, with the exception of juvenile nonfiction. As we've discussed before, backlist sales again, pacing the growth with those titles. This is titles that were published more than a year ago, showing the strongest gains, up 21.4% through the first half of the year. But hey, frontlist sales were also solid, rising 12.4%.
So Andrew, are publishing insiders surprised by this continued strength in the market for books?
You know, I think publishers were surprised last year, right? You know, in the teeth of the COVID-19 pandemic, it was surprising that sales in the first half of 2020 posted a 3% increase over the same period in 2019, especially after we saw an initial slump in sales in the early spring following the onset of the pandemic. And we know how the year ended. Print sales finished 2020, they were up 8.2% over 2019. So I think the industry is not surprised so much. They largely were expecting that print sales were going to continue to be robust in 2021. But at this level that we're seeing through these mid-year numbers, I can say this as an industry reporter, I'm surprised. I really am surprised at this level of robust growth in the book business. And it's nice to be pleasantly surprised after the last 18 months of, you know, not so pleasant surprises.
And there are some trends in these numbers, too, that have you especially encouraged. Tell us what indicators bode well for the second half of the year and even beyond.
Sure. So the increase in the first half of 2021 was led by the adult fiction category, where units rose an astounding 30.7%. And this is on top of strong fiction numbers that came back in 2020. But what has me really encouraged is, and our listeners may recall in our previous, you know, all of our previous reporting on this, is for, you know, the second half of the last decade, starting around 2013, fiction sales had begun this sort of worrying decline, and they'd fallen for like six straight years until they flattened out in 2019, and then they really took off in 2020. And so far in 2021, obviously 30.7% is a strong number. You know, we talk a lot about how political blockbusters in the Trump years and nonfiction titles have really boosted book sales in recent years. But with fiction sales now showing real strength and real growth, I think that is an extremely encouraging indicator of future growth. Now, what's driving this surge in fiction sales? I wish I knew. I'm not really sure. And I think a lot of people have theories. You know, obviously, the pandemic has impacted the market. You know, we're seeing more book clubs. We're seeing libraries who are really pushing discovery, including through ebooks and online catalogs. And I think people having more time and, you know, a little stimulus money has really given people sort of the break that they needed to rediscover the joy of fiction, right? But, you know, we're years away from any kind of meaningful postmortem on why fiction sales are up, or even if they're going to stay up. And in the meantime, I know publishers are focused on the right thing, which is keeping the pipeline filled with great new books. And there's been a ton of great new books, diverse authors, diverse books who are really sort of hitting on all cylinders now. And there are a couple other things I'd point out, too. One is the backlist strength. Backlist books do very well with online shopping. And online shopping over the last 18 months with the onset of the pandemic has really gone to the next level. You know, a good example of this is Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens, which 2 years after its publication, is it two, maybe even 3 years after its publication, it still has taken two spots on the category bestseller list for the first half of 2021. The trade paperback edition of that book sold 294,000 copies following its publication at the end of March. March of this year is when the trade paperback came out. And the hardcover edition is still hanging around. It's number 20. It sold 151,000 copies through the first half of the year. So, you know, that's an example of a backlist book that's still just really killing it. And the other thing I'd point out is the strength of the graphic novel format. Unit sales soared. This is a gaudy number. I'm not making this up. 178.5% in the first half of the year, up to 16.2 million copies sold. And that makes graphic novels the second largest adult fiction subcategory. Graphic novels made up about 20% of all adult fiction unit sales in the first 6 months of 2021, compared to 9.3% last year. That's just a huge jump. And you know, graphic novels have been a growing segment for some time, but they are really hitting their stride now. And I just think that is great because I have graphic novel lovers in my family. And I personally love them. And I think graphic novels are an incredible medium for storytelling and also one that is absolutely suited to print.
So sales for nonfiction generally and political books specifically have stayed strong, haven't they?
Yeah, you know, and we expected a bit of a tailing off, but we haven't really seen it so much. As a category, adult nonfiction sales for the first half of the year were up 15.6%, and that's a strong number. But where those sales were driven by political blockbusters in recent years, those books, the political blockbusters, are tailing off a bit, but self-help books have now stepped in. Self-help books had the largest gain in the first half of 2021, up 32.1%, which you might expect after a global pandemic. This was followed by business and economic books, which were up 24%. You know, home and gardening remained strong, and general nonfiction both had increases of 22%. And the number one title in the category for the first half of the year, The Hill We Climb by Amanda Gorman. That, of course, is the book version of the poem that she read at President Biden's inauguration. That book has sold more than 455,000 copies. But, you know, we've questioned, and I specifically have questioned in recent podcasts about what's next for political books in the future. And all I can say is, you know, I may have expressed a little concern about where they were going, but don't sleep on them for sure. The postmortems now from Trump's years are starting to come in, and these books look terrific. And in the coming weeks, we're seeing decent gains, expecting decent gains in these books. We have Bob Woodward with a new book coming out about the Trump years. Michael Wolff has a new book. And of course, if you're watching the news, you've seen Michael Bender talking about his new book, Frankly, We Won This Election, and Carol Lennig and Phil Rucker's latest, I Alone Can Fix It, both of which have made headlines with some bombshell revelations about the Trump presidency. And look, as more and more Trump administration personnel and more reporting comes out about the end of the administration and the personnel start to do more self-reflection, I think the nonfiction and political categories are going to jump up again. And I think they're going to remain stable for some time.
So Richard Branson may have won the billionaire space race against Jeff Bezos, Andrew, but Amazon did have its own launch this week too. Kindle Vella, a mobile-first interactive reading tool for serialized stories, has now taken off.
I like what you did with the launch thing there. Very good. Yeah, we talked about this in April, right? And I feel like we did this exact same podcast back in April. We talked about sales. And we talked about the Kindle Vella. Well, here we are again. Sales are still strong. And now the Vella is launching. Now, just to back up for a second, remind our listeners what Kindle Vella is. Kindle Vella is a new KDP style publishing service that allows authors to publish short, serialized fiction that can be read on smartphones and mobile devices via the Kindle app. And it's now live, launching with what the company says is thousands of stories containing tens of thousands of episodes. And with Vella, authors can publish episodes containing, I think, between 600 and 5,000 words, one at a time. And the first three episodes of each story are free. But to read subsequent episodes, readers need to buy tokens, which are available for purchase in bundles in the Kindle iOS app or on Amazon.com. And we didn't know this at the time, but you know, I think they're priced at like $199 for 200 tokens, and authors receive 50% of that token price. And those tokens would unlock at least four episodes, depending on episode length, this according to an Amazon spokesperson. You know, and Amazon is really touting Vella and the features that it offers. And they include, and I've got a list here in front of me, and I'll just read them off. Tagging. Readers can use tags to browse Vella for specific topics and genres. Following, right? You can, once a reader follows a Kindle Vella story, they'll be notified every time a new episode is released. you can give a thumbs up to an episode. You can mark something as a favorite. That's called faves, I believe. Author notes. This is interesting because authors can interact directly with their readers at the end of episodes. So that's a powerful new tool. And sharing. Readers can, you know, share Kindle Vella stories from their phones through Twitter, Facebook, and other social media channels, or even through text. And if you think about all of those features, ask yourself, what does that sound like to you?
If you ask me, Andrew, it sounds like the book business is having a mind meld with social media.
Exactly. You know, and frankly, it sounds like the web. It makes me wonder, nearly 14 years after the Kindle launched, why we're just now getting a service like this for reading. I mean, you have Wattpad, of course, and Scribd and other services. We saw Oyster, the subscription service, come and go, but nothing that has really aggressively sought to meld the way people engage with content and they interact with content and interact with each other with the traditional publishing business. Nothing like that until now. Now, I'm not saying this lack of, you know, having something like Vella is a failing of the publishing industry, because it is one thing to have a vision for where this can all go, and it's another thing to execute that vision. In the early days of digital reading, publishers had a lot of concerns, and rightly so, I think, about how digital was going to work. But we just got done talking about how well print sales are doing. And I think at this stage, it's safe to say the print is not nearly as threatened as some publishing leaders once feared. People like books. People like print. We have the evidence, which should open the door, I would think, finally, at this point, to some more innovation in the digital realm that can both grow readers and drive print. And who is once again leading this innovation? Amazon. Now, I want to make one or two broader points about Amazon here. You know, one is good and one is, well, you know, not so good. And I'll start with the not so good, which is I still have a lot of questions about this service because Amazon is not exactly transparent, right? And you know, I raised this question back in April when we first talked about the Kindle Vella program, and I'll raise it again here. How did Amazon decide on a 50-50 revenue split for this service, or how did they decide on the price of tokens? We don't know, and we won't know, but suffice it to say, the company sets the terms for itself. And this, to me, represents one of the key issues with Amazon, that it's this powerful platform for which it entirely dictates terms without negotiation. You use it or you don't. And while that is an opportunity for a lot of writers out there, you know, it's a problem for others. And you know, Amazon is not an agnostic platform, right? And how Amazon wields its power, how it uses its data, is something that is now rightly under scrutiny. And I think especially so after President Biden's remarks last week about antitrust action last week. But the other thing that we hear, you know, we hear so much about Amazon competing unfairly with publishers. And I think the launch of Vella shows that, you know, that's not the whole story. I think Kindle Vella is an example of Amazon filling a need in the publishing landscape, something that traditional publishers would not be able to do or wouldn't think to do. So while we can talk about Amazon's unfair practices, part of the conversation, too, has to be how virtually all of the innovation in the reading business comes from outside the publishing world, and so much of it comes from Amazon. And I said it back in April, and I'll say it again now, the Vella program is another example of Amazon innovating in a space that should be well within the ambit of traditional publishers, but for some reason just isn't, at least not yet.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly Senior Writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, an avid comics reader from childhood, Gila Charles Gonzalez, joined Library Pass on October 2020 as Chief Content Officer, where he leads development for Comics Plus, a content gateway for K-12 public and academic libraries. Comics have long played an important role in the reading habits of many children and adults around the world, says Gonzalez, but in North America, appreciation of the form, including graphic novels and manga, has been late to come.
So I think what's interesting about comics in the U.S. is, you know, for a long time, particularly in my childhood, comics had kind of been pretty firmly rooted in the superhero world. Marvel, DC, in the 90s, indie comics started to grow. Image was born in and is now the number three direct market comics publisher. That's an important distinction versus broad trade market. But for the most part, you know, they were superheroes. They were generally dismissed as for kids. But then you started to see this growth in manga. And then separately, a few years later, this growth in comics specifically for children, mostly coming out of non-traditional comics publishers. So it wasn't Marvel and DC. So you had this kind of slow under-the-radar growth in a couple of areas of comics where, for most people, the definition of comics was still superheroes, Marvel and DC.
Comics go to school. Next on this CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.